Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode.
Today, I'm joined by Kimberly Becker, and through her brand Kay Becker, she empowers women by designing beautiful clothing that really fits and does it in a sustainable and ethical way. So welcome to How Fitting, Kimberly.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
So jumping right in, the fashion industry is an industry that maybe not so much in the leadership, but certainly in the the maker side is dominated by women, but there's still a lot of issues with having kind of equal rights for women. So I'm curious, what do you think is the current state of feminism in today's fashion industry?
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to say from the perspective of getting dressed versus as opposed to who's making the clothes. There's two sides to that question, right? So getting dressed, I feel like we are finally, although the runway doesn't necessarily reflect it, we are beginning to design clothes that that enhance a woman and embrace her rather than fight her by expecting, having unrealistic expectations being placed on us for what our bodies are supposed to look like. And I believe that when we, there are so many ways to be beautiful in the clothing that you choose. And if you embrace those concepts, I believe a lot more of us could be a lot happier with our bodies as opposed to trying to fit into the contours of what the industry tells us or the world tells us that we're supposed to be looking like and what we're supposed to dress in. For example, I love to say that I think if you wear a beautiful, you know, sexy camisole under your shirt or dress, that you just present better to the world because you internally feel good. No one has to see it.
Mm-hmm.
It just helps you to feel really good about it. Just makes you feel good, and it's not for other people, right? But we present as more, we feel more confident, more powerful when we look good in our clothes and when the clothes are designed to embrace us. On the manufacturing side of things, what I'm seeing in the garment industry from my little tiny point of view, working in the New York fashion district and the garment district, is that the women are definitely dominating and that we are dictating how things are going to go. We are making the clothes that fit us better, that are at least, you know, we're trying, and that the perspective is our perspective more and more as opposed to what men tell us we're supposed to dress in.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that even, because I think historically it was very much like the men were the designers and the women were the sewers.
Oh, definitely. And that is to some degree still true at the high end, right? But I'm designing for in a sort of the mid-range category. The clothes are not inexpensive for a lot of reasons, but I'm seeing sort of the everyday person's clothes being sewn to the sort of higher end. And I'm working with an all-woman team. Like I do have some men who sew for me in the family group that I work with, but the women are running the show for sure.
That's so cool. Yeah. So how have you seen this, you know, like feminism and the change of, you know, who is, you know, how we are designing for women and what the kind of ideal is, the expectation? Have you seen that change over the course of your career?
So when I started in the garment industry, it was back in the early 90s, and I was working at Liz Claiborne at the time. And what I saw there was a little bit more sort of middle of the road, you know, working woman kind of attire. So we were dressing women in clothes that more or less were designed to be men's clothes for work, but we made them more feminine, right? So button-down shirts and tailored pants and jackets, very traditional, if you really think about it, traditional menswear for the most part. But now I believe women have embraced being us rather than being, I'm all for a good suit jacket. I'm designing one right now for my line, but I definitely think that we are much more braver, right? About going out and buying the things that we like to wear and wearing those out into the world. And you know, it's been this notion forever that women have to break through this glass ceiling in order to really get to the CEO level, to the Fortune 500 company top tiers. I believe it in the last like 15 or 20 years that we've decided that a lot of us have decided we're sick and tired of trying to break through that glass ceiling. It's pretty much impenetrable in a lot of ways. And so we've just gone around it. And that means more independent, right? We're running our own shows. We're running our own businesses where we are being the bosses we're hiring. So for me, that means I am entirely running my own show. All of the people I work with, my photographer, my creative director, my web people, my cutters and sewers, my pattern makers, all of them are all women. And so we are dictating how this is going to look, for how our lives are going to be run. And so the clothes, like my line, is quite feminine. I make a wide leg pant that is not so restrictive. It has elastic on the back, so it's comfortable to, they're comfortable to sit in. Like, so choices we're making because it's for us. And the women who come to purchase these clothes from us, you know, I sit down with focus groups sometimes that I gather women together in a room and we start talking. And inevitably, the first thing they talk about is their such destructive body image notions that we've been raised with, young or old. I used to think that young people kind of were getting away from it, that we were at least somewhat successful at parenting and that we weren't talking about being fat and trying to go on a diet all the time as moms. But we actually, I mean, it's still there. It's still damaging. And so when you sit down and talk to women and you hear all of those stories, then I say, let's try some clothes on. And they start putting the clothes on. They realize they're beautiful. And that if you get clothes that are cut well, you can be beautiful in the world. You can feel confident in your body the way it is. I mean, you know, that's the goal, right? Everybody's different. And so I think that a lot of the designs are being created in a more flattering way. I hope that that trend continues. I love the more loose pants coming back to fashion for comfort and for looks. And just, you know, I just think that it gives us more choices.
Yeah. Yeah, I love so many things about what you just said. And I totally agree that like some of the most like the fun, most fun moments and rewarding moments of my job is seeing, you know, the fit model or somebody try on the garment and the smile that, you know, on their face, you can see it on their face when they feel comfortable and beautiful. And like, that's when I know, like, okay, we've nailed the fit. We've nailed the design, is when you see that smile on the model's face. It makes a huge difference.
It's everything. And they, when I watch them and put these clothes on, I have to do as much in person as I can because of what you just said, because it reinforces for me that I'm doing it right. When you see people's faces light up, even if it's a gorgeous model, which my models are professional models, or if it's your friend, you know, or a total stranger just walked into my shop, like they all, when you see that light come on in their face, and oftentimes if you talk to them, the first thing they'll say is they'll tell you about the part of their body they don't like, and then they'll explain how putting on these clothes took that problem away or disguised it, or I often talk about my clothes as they're designed to be fun, beautiful, well-made, tailored clothes, but I also describe them as sort of smoothing out the bumps, the lumps and bumps sometimes, right? And it's just a part of life. It's part of being a person. You know, we're not perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And we move. Like you said, it's like you want to be comfortable not just standing there or like in a photograph, but sitting. Yeah. Or moving around, and that all takes, you know, design consideration for the function as well as the look. So if I'm not mistaken, you didn't originally start out to create an apparel brand. I believe it started with your Dolls for Change project. Can you share more about what that project was and how that led into Kay Becker?
Sure. So I was trained as a textile designer at RISD, graduated in the early 90s, and my life kind of took a few shifts. I started in the garment industry, and then I moved away from that into the upholstery world, and then I decided to do my own artwork for a period of time. I was mostly doing like painting and stuff like that. I was at an artist residency along those lines, doing my painting and my fiber work. I was invited to spend a month in Wyoming just making art. It was a gift. Artists kill for these residencies. They're wonderful places to go.
Sounds so fun. Like a creative.
Dreamy. Like they cooked for me. I had my own room. I had my own studio. It was delightful. And during that time that I was there, Brett Kavanaugh got seated on the Supreme Court. So I'm going to go political for a second, but
yeah, absolutely.
I was beside myself. I just couldn't believe no one saved us from this. Like, I just felt like it was so clear that he was not eligible to be on this court for a million reasons, but not the least of which is the number of women that came out and spoke out against him for assault. In my like just complete dismay, I walked back into my studio and I was in the middle of a massive project. It was in the middle of a really big project. It was part of a series I was working on, but I couldn't do anything else. I didn't know what to do, so I made a doll. I sewed a doll. I'd never made a doll before. I cut up my own clothes that I brought with me because I didn't bring stuff to make dolls. I was doing something completely different. And so I made this doll, and then the next day I made another one, and the day after that I did it again, and this continued for the rest of this month that I was in Wyoming. And then I kept going, and it became, I called for the first 9 months I was doing it, I called it a doll a day until Kavanaugh's impeached. That was my hashtag. And I just wanted to keep the focus on the fact that this was completely unacceptable. So I made I made 1,000 dolls. I did it for 1,000 days. And then I stopped, I think partway through, actually, I decided to call it Dolls for Change to give it a positive spin rather than the negative of a doll a day until Kavanaugh's impeached. And I sold all of the dolls. They were about $100 each. Some people gave me more. Some of them, I still have a few, but I use all of the money, 100% of the funds went to a nonprofit that I was working with in Uganda. We built a bathroom unit for young women in a rural schoolyard. Apparently they don't have, it's like a hole in the ground with a roof over it. The boys use them, but when the girls start to get their periods, they just don't have any privacy and they drop out of school. And this $11,000 bathroom unit literally, it keeps hundreds of girls every year from dropping out of school and ending up pregnant. And it also caused the community to thrive. People started moving to the community because they knew that this was a part of that school. And so it was a massive plus, like a massive support for girls and for educating women. I don't care what country you're in, where you are in the world, we need to support all of them. And the other factor with the dolls is that they're made out of recycled clothes. And they're quite glamorous. They're not like rag dolls. They're really, they evolved and they became pretty long and they're sweet. They're very special. Each one of them is unique and they're dressed in quite stylish outfits the way I would go to Goodwill and find a great little silk tank top and a great pattern and make a dress out of it. And people started to say to me, I want to dress like your dolls. You should make a clothing line. And it that was the first seed that was planted. And it took me a couple of years to really sort of think that through. It's a tremendous financial commitment to start a clothing line. But I realized a lot of my contacts in New York from the 90s were still there. And I still had a way back in. So I decided to go for it.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. That's like so cool that with that project, it almost seems like it was a way for you to cope or something to do with that, you know, disappointing new, you know, political situation, then turning that into like a positive change for these girls and community in Uganda. That's really special.
It felt like I needed to do something. I still feel like that. And, you know, now we donate to causes, feminist causes, through a percentage of my sales. And I just feel like it's so important to give back and to keep an eye on the small, you know, the unknown people, the situations that we just don't know are even happening, you know, in rural America or Ghana or Uganda or wherever it is, one person at a time.
Yeah, so that was the spark then for the apparel brand. What did you, you know, how long after that before you actually decided to make it a thing, and what went into that decision? Because like you said, it is a bigger investment to start an apparel brand.
Yeah, you have no idea. So it took me a year or two thinking things through, and then it occurred to me that there were clothes. I am always thinking about clothes I've had in the past that I loved that, you know, eventually fell apart, or I lost them, or I gave them away, or whatever happened, and I can't replace them. And the reason I loved them was because the quality was really nice and the cut was perfect. You know, it just, I am forever questioning choices that they make in the apparel industry that I think they make simply because it's the way they've always done it. Like putting a belt on a trench coat. Does anyone use that belt? We are constantly tugging at that belt, trying to figure out how to get it out of the way and look fine and not fall off. And, you know, so things like that.
I end up like tying it behind.
Yes. And it, or, you know what? Design it tied then. Like, why are we? It just doesn't make sense. And so the first piece that I decided to try my hand at was a swing coat. It was a coat I had back in the late 80s that I purchased in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It was way more money than I ever should have been spending on a piece of clothing at that. I was like in, you know, finishing high school, or maybe I was in college. But I loved it. I loved the quality of it. I loved the fit. I loved the way it looked with other clothes. And I wore it till it died. Like I wore it, I repaired it. You know, I always ask people, what's the garment that you're willing to repair? You love it so much. I want to know what that looks like. So I took it to, I found a manufacturer that did pattern making and sampling. It took a few tries to find the right people to work with. I definitely had stumbles along the way looking for the right team who could work at the quality level I was looking for. But that first coat, you know, it was sort of the anchor for my collection. And I decided that I had to make the clothes that, I'm 5'2", and I decided at first I decided that this is straying from your question a bit, but at first I decided I wanted to do a line that was petite. But what I found out is most women are like, I think it's like 70% of women are between 5 feet and 5'5" in this country, which happens to be labeled petite. But when I label it petite, if you're not like a size 2 and 5'2", you don't think you're petite. So I was losing a large market share simply because people who should have been buying my clothes, because I make up to a size 22, people who should have been buying my clothes weren't, because they didn't know petite meant them. And so I dropped the petite label and I've had no trouble at all. You know, if someone's 5'7", they're going to ask me how long the pants are before they buy them. They just do. In the same way, when I'm being 5'2", if I'm buying a dress, I need to make sure that it's not going to hit the floor when I purchase it, right? The model I'm looking at online is,
if she's not 6 feet tall.
Yeah, exactly. So I shifted back away from the petite angle and just kept going. I kept designing clothes that were pieces in my memory. I would remember something that I really loved, something that I loved the fit on, and I would apply that to sketches and samples for new pieces in the collection?
I love that question that you asked people of what is the item that you're willing to repair or mend? You love it so much. Yeah, because those are the pieces that people are willing to invest in, you know, like the coat that you wore to the death. And
you're also like, it's not, it's the silhouette is a big part of it, right? But mm-hmm. also you might that like when sometimes when I do my little round table discussions with them and I ask them to bring their favorite piece of clothing, like even if it's something that they can't get one leg into anymore, but they wore in high school, or if it's something they're wearing every day now. And what I often find is it's a super high quality piece of clothing, and that they don't understand because they're not manufacturing clothes. They don't understand that what the reason they love it is because it's so well made. And so it looks better on their body. Also because the waistline is, you know, half an inch higher than your natural waist, which just makes everything taper differently. Or putting a box pleat in that certain spot is the reason why it's so comfortable, or whatever it is. Like it, there's always something very special. It's seldom a piece from H&M, you know, that they, yeah, it helps.
That's so interesting. So have you noticed any like commonalities or themes in the silhouette, or, you know, other than the construction itself of these garments? Design-wise, did they have anything in common of what these women were bringing of their favorite piece?
So they tend to be there do tend to be silhouette similarities, like a dress that is more fitted on top and opens at the bottom in some way or another, or like it might be that the trying to think what else people have brought to me. It might be a tank top that is just a little bit longer than your average tank top. It's usually something sort of similar to what you might, like I said, find at H&M or at Target, but they've just taken it one step further with the thoughtfulness of the design. And that's what I usually grab onto when I see it. I'll go sketch something after I see the clothes that they bring in, so I remember. Or it's a detail, like it, you know, well-made jacket, but there's some detail about it that, like a ribbon, you know, that a ribbon down the placket where the buttons go or something that just sets it apart and makes it not scream at like the world, look at me, but just something subtle that is sophisticated, a little bit different.
Yeah, those details I feel like make all the difference. And even like you said, like a simple tank top, you know, sometimes I see designers where it's like, they'll say something like, oh, it's really basic, like, it's going to be super easy. I'm like, it's never as easy as you think it is, even for the basics, because it's all of those, like, maybe the scoop of the neck is just, like, you know, 3/8 of an inch higher, or the armhole is cut slightly differently, or the length, like you said, and it's all those tiny things that make the biggest difference.
Totally. And tank tops are such a good example. I bought a tank top once for $150. It was the most ridiculous amount of money for me to spend at that time in my life on a tank top. But I bought it because the armhole was perfect. Like, and I wanted to remember it, you know, because it wasn't too tight. It wasn't too open. It didn't gap funny. Like it was just right. And that takes that nuance. Those nuances are what only come to pass with a good relationship between a designer and a pattern maker. I mean, it's everything.
Yeah. So how did you end up at, I know you said it took a little bit to find like the team or the pattern maker, the factory that could produce the quality you were looking for. How did you end up finding, you know, the right team that you could have that relationship with to really get these details right?
I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I wasted a lot of money. Part of the expense is just the things you do wrong, right? Getting to the right answers. I believe the first manufacturer I found was out in California, and I found them from like Googling all-inclusive package collect apparel design manufacturer or something like that. And like I said, they were super nice, and they tried, but it was clear that they weren't prepared to do what I was asking. So then I found, actually through the CFDA, is that the, mm-hmm. the Council of Fashion Designers Association? They have some really great lists of manufacturers, fabric suppliers, notions, like different, and then of course, pattern makers. And I went to that list for my next person. And she and I worked really well together. She was a RISD grad. I was really comfortable with her. But again, the manufacturer that she was working with just wasn't keeping up with my with what I wanted. So I made one last switch and I went back to that CFDA group list. And my current sewers and pattern maker they're like family. My daughter's just got engaged and we're gonna do a dress. They're all excited to have her come in and get fitted, and we're gonna design a dress for her. They're just really good people, and they're designing for gigantic names, DKNY and, you know, Hugo Boss, and they're sewing for big people, and I'm ordering my little piddly, you know, 30 or 50 pieces at a time, but they're happy to do it, and they're incredibly supportive. So
oh, that's great. Yeah.
I got lucky.
Yeah. So what parts of the process, the design or the, you know, brand are you working on yourself versus it sounds like this group that you're working with is kind of like a start to finish helping with development, pattern making, and production. So how do you kind of divide up all the things? So there's many hats in a fashion brand.
Yeah, so many hats. So it's me that I am Kay Becker, and then I have all those women I named, like the photographer and the creative director, and those people are all pretty much freelance. So when I need them, they help me, they work with me. I've just gotten to the place where I'm actually and I have a coach, and she's unbelievable. Actually, you interviewed her, Jane, from Fashion
Jane
Brand.
Hamill.
Yeah. She's been coaching me for the last 18 months, and I couldn't live without her. But what I do is I bring samples and that I've pinned or cut up or adjusted, and then I bring sketches and I go to New York and hand it off to the pattern maker, and they do the pattern and the sample, and then I get that back. And I've learned through experience that you have to like wear the clothes around, try washing them, try wearing them in different situations, and then I make adjustments and bring them back to New York, and they make adjustments, and then we go to the, you know, then we send it to marking and grading to have the sizing all put together and the patterns for the sewers, and production is done at their end, of course, and then I do all of the social media and emailing and lugging all the stuff to the shows. I go to a lot of marketplaces, a lot of art shows that sell direct to consumer. I don't do anything wholesale. So it's one customer at a time, like finding those people, getting them on the email list so that they know what's going on with me. I sort of strike that fine balance of being personal, but not too personal. I don't want to look like I'm like you accidentally stumbled upon Everlane, but at the same time, I don't want it to look homemade. Like I want it to feel like it's worth the investment. Like I know what I'm doing. So I do bring in this new creative director I'm hiring is really going to be there for me to, you know, stay on message. You can imagine when you're designing a clothing line, how fast you can stray off message. Like if you just get a really fun idea, ooh, that skirt's really cool, and you start, and then you're like off doing something completely different than you had been doing, and you lose focus, or for a week you don't send an email or something like that kind of stuff. But that consistency is everything in keeping a brand moving forward. So I don't know if I answered your question exactly, but I do most of the hats are typically on my head.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things in what you just said that I want to dive into more. First, the balance of being personal, but not like too personal and like homemade. Where's the balance that you found that works for you there in order to, you know, not sound corporate, I'm guessing is kind of the one side of things, but then Yeah, I guess I'm curious more, like, what is the hesitation and where's the line for you of when it becomes like too personal or homemade business?
So it's been a little bit of experimentation, right? So I am a visual person and I have to have, if something isn't right in front of me where I can see it, I forget it exists. So I have these big, my walls are all pinnable. I can stick pins into the walls of my studio and I cover the walls in tear sheets from magazines and sketches and photographs and business cards I pick up. I travel a lot. So little bits and pieces I grab along the way, tote bags that I find at shops, whatever it is. Like, it's my wall is full of images. And I'm telling you this because it seems like that would be really interesting to people. So I'll take pictures of that wall and post it and say, oh, here's my idea wall, some new sketches I'm working on. Crickets. Like, nobody wants to see it. Nobody, I mean, maybe they look, but they don't, nobody likes it. Nobody comments on it. I cannot get attention up from this angle. And so I've learned, like, okay, that's one kind of personal that maybe isn't really inspiring people to take a second look. So then I thought I would try like taking photographs when I'm traveling of what I see out on the street. That tends to get people's attention a little bit more. So, okay, that's that kind of personal seems to be working for me. Sometimes behind the scenes stuff that is going, like, I have a knitwear. My knitwear is all manufactured on demand in Brooklyn, New York. And I went to the factory and took some pictures, and people, that was interesting to people because they're interested in the sustainable aspect of my brand. So that got their attention. So it's like a little bit of playing around with different concepts. I'm still working it out. I still haven't honed it exactly. And as far as like the photographs go, you know, I had a really fabulous photographer the very first time when I launched. I just launched a year ago, October. And my first photographer, she did a great photo shoot, but she was more of a portrait photographer. And so the clothes didn't really come out as clearly as they needed to, I think. Some subconscious thing in our brains when we're shopping online has to click for us to purchase stuff. And we weren't getting the clicks, right? So I hired a new photographer and she gets it. Like, she just, we had great models and they worked hard for us, but the photographer knew what she wanted and the photographs show it. And the website has completely transformed. And my creative director also has brought transformative changes to the look and the feel. We've softened the website a little bit with a little bit more color. I was thinking like it had to be really crisp and stark because that's the only way it's going to feel professional. But I brought me into it by adding a little bit of pink and a lot of sort of warm, you know, like mushroom colors and taupes and stuff to the look so that it's more me. So it's definitely got a little more personality that reflects me and my brand and my what appeals to me, which I think was the right thing to do. Because I'm not trying to appeal to everybody. There's just no way. So I want people to understand where the nuance of my creativity comes from. And that will either speak to you when you click on it or it won't. And it seems to be working so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such a challenge to find that balance for, you know, kind of all of us running brands, whether it's fashion in, you know, apparel product or something else. Of, you know, how much of it is a personal brand versus the brand having its own identity, and, you know, what is that line of what is the message? What is the voice? So that's another thing that you had mentioned is like, it's so easy to stray from the message and get distracted by other ideas and designs. What would you say is the kind of core message of Kay Becker?
So my values, the feminist angle and the sustainable sort of like we can't keep doing to the earth what we're doing to the earth angle are the two my personal core values and so a capsule collection or even several capsule collections, things that sort of an approach to dressing, to shopping that limits or reduces the amount of consumption that we take on every day, I think is a big part of, it is a big part of my brand. So pieces are sort of mix and matchable. They're almost, you can put the pants with the long vest and the black tee. You can put the black tee under the sleeveless dress. You can wear the sleeveless dress with the black tee under it and tights and boots, or you can put it on the sandals with nothing under it in the summertime. So it's, each piece has several lives going on at the same time. And I, the knitwear, it's all layering pieces. So you can buy the beautiful V-neck cashmere sweater and wear it with a pair of and sandals in the summer to go out in the evening, or you can layer it with beautiful cashmere scarf and have the cute tank underneath it and pants and boots. And so there's almost a seasonless approach to it, and also an ease. I think that we get overwhelmed when we go to our closets. We don't know what to wear. It's just another stressor in our lives. But if this core collection is there, and you know, you can, any of these pieces you grab and you put them on, they're going to look good. That's the end of that problem for the day. You look great. You can go out and you can be you. You can focus on other things. You don't always have to be futzing with, does this really look good? Should I have changed out of this? I don't know if this is really what I wanted to, how I wanted to portray myself. Maybe this looks kind of crappy because it's kind of getting old and looks dowdy, or, whatever it is, that I'm trying to just get that out of the way. So the capsule collection aspect, the feminine sort of flattering aspect of the clothing is important to me. Like I said, smoothing out the bumps. I have this really cute knotted vest. It's all, oh, and all the clothes are made out of either 100% natural fiber or something that's been recycled, to make the fabric that the garments are made out of. And so this little vest is made out of cupro, which is a recycled rayon, and you can knot it across your chest. And it's kind of this magic thing, because it goes down to your, over your hips. So it smooths out that area. And if you don't really love showing, if you want to see your small waistline, you're still going to see it because it's knotted across the chest, but then it opens up and kind of just drapes down over your hips. And if your boobs are something you worry about, the knotted thing diminishes them. But if you don't really have boobs, putting this on, it makes you look like you have more going on there. It's like this magic item. Mm-hmm. But those are the kind of pieces. I have a linen jacket that I tell people all the time, it does not need to go away when September hits. This jacket, it's a deep, one of them is a deep sort of Bordeaux red color, and it looks fabulous over a turtleneck. It completely carries in the fall and winter, but it's made out of this beautiful tissue linen. So it's super high quality, and it's just such a magical jacket, the way it drapes. So each piece really has its own story, but it's all part of the collection. It works as a unit. It's supposed to, they're supposed to enhance each other, each piece.
Nice. Yeah. So you've got the sustainability, the capsule, make it easier, and then the feminism.
And I guess the give back. I do a give back.
Yeah.
There's a group called the Bridget Alliance, and they help women who are in places where they're not, have no access to abortions, but need medical care and need an abortion. They help pay for them to get to the destination they need to get to have safe medical care, and put them up in hotels and do whatever else they need to do to make that happen for them. So a portion of the proceeds go to the Bridget Alliance.
Yeah, so you're continuing that mission as well, and the activism in a way of supporting the values that you care about, which is really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So with these values and running your business, have you found that they add challenges to running the brand, or have they made it easier?
It would be so much easier to sew these clothes in Bangladesh out of cheap cheap fabric from another part of the world and be shipping them back and forth across continents and pricing them quite a bit lower than I have to price my clothing at, it would be much easier. But it also wouldn't be me. So I manufacture everything in the U.S. and I use high quality fabrics, as little blended fabrics as possible. It's okay if they're all natural and it's okay if they're all polyester or nylon or something. But when you have a blend of, we're finding out that if you blend natural and man-made fibers together, that that fabric is not recyclable. Yeah. So I didn't know that until recently, but where I'm working toward doing one, or, you know, I'm trying to avoid mixed fabrics. It's going to be a challenge for us Americans because jeans with Lycra in them are not recyclable. But if you, I don't know, and the last time was you put a pair of jeans on that had no stretch in them, but they are so uncomfortable. So in that case, I just won't make jeans. Like, I'm really trying to stay true to the commitment I've made to sustainable fabrics, ethically sewn, you know, very little carbon footprint, very little waste. My knitting, the folks who knit for me, there's almost zero waste in the knitting. They knit on demand. All the materials are super high quality. The cashmere, like, I swear that those goats, you know, are hand bottle fed. They're so well cared for. So at least there's that. Like, I can feel good about that. I feel like I have to. Like, we're just in a place right now in the world that we can't keep exploiting the natural resources that we have. We just have to pull back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There's so much that goes into all of this, and it is more expensive, but in the long run, it's worth it, you know, both for our own health. Like, I was at a virtual event yesterday talking about, there's a climate scientist talking about the effects to, like, our bodies of microplastics. And, you know, thinking about that as designers and people working in fashion, it's a huge deal that I think will only become, you know, as the more research comes out about the effects of that. And, you know, like you said, the recycling, that's something that I think about a lot is, yeah, it, as much as the comfort, like, we rely on those blends for comfort or to, like, make it cheaper by not doing all natural fibers, but then still have some of the properties of natural fibers. But it's actually better to do either all one or all the other.
Definitely. I believe that if you really stop and think about what you pay for a garment, like, the cost is an issue. It's a challenge. It's a full-time job on my part to help people understand why it's worth paying $480 for that linen jacket from me instead of $90 for a similar one from a department store. And a big part of that, I think, is simply educating people to what you were just saying, like, that this is long-term better for our health, better for the planet, it's better for the workers, it's better for recycling, for the future, for our children. There are so many factors. But also, if you really stop and think about, I think there's some phrase, they call it cost per wear, where you're doing the math on, okay, I bought that white button down at Target and I paid $34 for it and I wore it 8 times before a button fell off or before it shrank too much or before just kind of didn't look as good. So that's a pretty good bang for my buck, right? $34 for 8 wears, 8 awesome wears. Like, I'll take it. But if you buy my top for $270, you're going to wear it for 5 years or more, and it won't have done as much damage to the earth in getting to become a top, and it wasn't shipped back and forth across the world burning fossil fuels. It's a beautiful garment that you can depend on. And so cost per wear, when you really do the math on that, if you wear it, you know, I don't know, 38 times or something, that's going to actually really be much more cost efficient. So people are starting to understand. Right now, young people are awesome at thrift. They're thrifting. Everybody, I mean, I thrift. I love thrifting.
I do too.
But But like, eventually I do need like a cocktail dress for a party, or I need a really nice pair of pants because I keep buying pants. I think we all could just be recycling and buying vintage clothes and secondhand clothes is a really good excuse for buying more than we necessarily need, or buying the thing that maybe we wouldn't have bought if we were going to pay for it full price brand new in some cases. And I think that we have to undo that thinking that you can just always go out and buy more. Like, go back into your closet and see if something there really works for you is becoming less and less common for us. I'm covering a lot of bases here all at once, but I got my brain thinking. Like, I think that it's really important to understand why the jacket costs $475 before you poo-poo it and walk away without giving it a thought. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's really important to understand why the Target shirt costs $34 before just picking it up and purchasing it and not thinking about the consequences of that action.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is, I think, a lot of the education, as you say, a lot of people either don't know anything about this or the implications or really what goes into making clothes, or they just don't think about it in the store. They're like, oh, this is a good deal. And they don't think to look at the care label to see what it's made of. They don't think to look at the quality, or don't know to look at the quality of the stitching or think about exactly how many times they're going to wear it or what they can wear it with in their current wardrobe and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's just as guilty of buying a Target shirt as anybody. And I'm trying to be better about it. And also, it's tremendous service to so many families that don't have that much money right now, or have small children, or trying to cover college costs, or whatever it is. Clearly, there's a time and a place for that kind of, to just own it and buy the cool clothes like that are inexpensive. But when you're in a place in your life and in your finances and everything else that you can afford to make an investment in a piece rather than buying five mediocre pieces, buying one really high quality piece, I think it's our responsibility to step up and do it when we're able.
So I'd also like to know, like, your background and your degree is in the textile side of things, right? Yeah. So how does your like textile background influence your fabric choices and even your apparel design choices now?
So when I was designing fabric for a living or working with fabric manufacturers to find the right fabrics for the clothing we were designing at like Liz Claiborne or at Oshkosh or at L.L. Bean or whatever, I learned a lot about things that nobody thinks about, like the amount of wear that fabric can take, how many times you can rub that fabric before it wears a hole through, or what it means to sew with canvas as opposed to denim, why it's different. Canvas is a lot more likely to tear because of the way that it's woven on a loom than denim because of the way it's woven. And thinking about widths of fabric when you're making something that's going to have a pattern, or a lot of that stuff just is sort of built into my brain because I know how to do it. I worked at textile mills. I actually worked at a textile mill in Alabama for a number of years when I was young and stood next to the fixers at the looms weaving the fabric, you know, so I really understand it from day one, from when it's first, it's just a cone of yarn sitting at a loom getting ready to be woven. And so, and finishes, I know a lot about the finishing on fabrics. So when I go to look at bolts of fabric, or when I'm, you know, sourcing fabric online, I know what's going to last and what's not. I understand how it's going to pleat, how it's going to fall, how it's going to work if you layer two different fabrics together, what's going to happen. I don't know everything. I will still experiment, wear the clothes, make sure I like the way that they react to each other, two different fabrics in a garment. But I'm bringing that weird information that was taught to me so many years ago to the table with every thought that I make while I'm picking fabric. And I think it's working because people, when they do finally get in person with my clothes, all they can talk about is how beautiful they feel. I have a dress that's made out of Japanese cotton It's this gorgeous polished cotton. It's the same shirting fabric they make high-end men's shirts from. Stunning. Like, you love having it on. And so that, the fact that people are picking up on it, that it's not just all in my head, mm-hmm. Is everything. So I think it's working. I think it's, you know, people are impressed with the feeling, the quality, the way it drapes on the body. And I think it's a big part of what I bring to my brand, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And I think that textiles is an area where I feel like I'm always learning too. Like, I have a lot of experience working with fabrics and kind of knowing how they're going to drape and behave, but I don't have like the formal training like you do in all the finishings and, you know, being there at the mill.
But yeah, it's definitely an odd experience, but it was I'm bringing it forward with me, which is nice. But you, I'm sure, from sewing so many different garments for people and doing sampling, have a completely amazing, interesting other perspective, which is why I lean so hard on my pattern makers and my sample makers, and that there's just so much to know, right? There's so many angles of this to think about.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with a client yesterday. We were talking about fabrics for her project and just like the pros and cons of so many different things. And, you know, she chooses this design, look, or put the seams this way, like, here's the things we would need to think about fabric wise, or, you know, combining different materials and how are they going to stretch and shrink and wash, or what the care instructions be. And there's so many variables, but it's a fun puzzle, I think, to put together.
A really fun puzzle.
And once you've done all that testing and know, you know, like you said, wearing it around, seeing how it washes and wears and feels and done that, like, that is a lot of work, but that's what makes the end product like really high quality and last, because you know what to expect with those materials and you've designed with their exact properties in mind.
Yeah, and you've designed out problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so fun getting to know more about you and your brand, Kimberly. I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
So I believe that my value is, I had a word for it because I was trying to prepare for this. I think that the value that I want to put out to the world is women's empowerment. I don't know if you really call it a value, but for me, that's what I want to carry forward. And I do it through dressing women in clothes that really fit them, focusing on a wide range of body types, wide range of sizes, I should say. I don't think any brand can design for every body type. That's just not going to happen. It's not reasonable. And doing it in a way that empowers women to go out in the world and make a difference. Because I think we have to depend on ourselves if we want to. We need to save the world.
Yeah. Make those changes happen.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So cool. Well, thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find out more about your work and see the beautiful pieces from Kay Becker and shop those online?
So it's kaybeckerdesigns.com. And I am based out of Maine. And so I'm in the mid-coast area of Maine, just south of Boothe Bay, just like half hour north of Portland. And I do have a little shop that's part of my studio. So if anybody's in the Maine area and would like to come in for an in-person kind of styling session / glass of wine or coffee, whatever you want, depending on the time of day, I always welcome that. And you can make appointments on the website at Kay Becker Designs. So yeah, thank you, Allison. Really, this has just been super fun.
I'm good. Yeah, thank you for joining me.
All right. Awesome.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.